This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Every day, 1,000 New Yorkers call with the same complaint, the noise. All right, maybe the city never sleeps, but all the individuals in it want to. And like a number of cities and towns across the country, New York is debating new legislation to update noise abatement ordinances that are 30 years old. More about that a little later in the program. We want to hear from you this hour about whether noise is a problem where you live, what kind of noise it is, and what, if anything, is being done to control it. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Or you can email us, TOTN at NPR.org. Now, Mike Pesca from our sister program Day to Day joins us from our bureau in New York. Mike, good of you to be with us.
Hi, Neil.
Now, we know that it's not only noisy in New York, in some ways it's supposed to be noisy, but how bad is it?
Well, let me give you or play for you an illustration. Yesterday, I was walking down the street, walking my dog, and I passed by this incredibly loud work site. And it was so loud, it prevented me from having a conversation to a person standing a foot away from me. And I wouldn't have even noticed how remarkably loud it was, except that I knew that today I'd be talking to you about noise. So I said to myself, oh, I better go get my tape recorder and try to capture some of this jackhammering. So I think we might have some of that lying around the studio, of this jackhammering noise. Yeah. Now, as you know, Neil, you know radio, so we could play this as loud or as soft as we want, and you don't really get a sense. So what I tried to do was establish a baseline of my speaking, and I spoke into my microphone at the exact level that I'm speaking to you now, just regular conversational speech, and I put the microphone right up next to my mouth to try to see what you could hear on the microphone over the sound of this jackhammer, and I think we have some of that just to illustrate this point.
If this were a photograph for comparison, we might display a penny next to an object to give you the relative size. What I'm doing now is...
Mike, if you're going to go anywhere in your radio career, you might want to get rid of the jackhammer.
Yeah. Well, you really couldn't understand what I was saying, and that's the point. And the people working on that project there, and it was a city project, even though they were private contractors, that was occurring at 10 o'clock at night. They told me they could do that for as long as they wanted, as long as they needed, and they planned to go past midnight with that kind of sound.
10 o'clock at night. And how close were you to that jackhammer, by the way?
Well, I had a microphone. It's called a shotgun microphone, so it picks up noise from a little while away. But at the closest I was, when you couldn't hear me speaking into the tape, I was a good 10 feet away. The guy who was using the jackhammer wasn't using those protective earphones. I don't know how he survived.
Now, construction, traffic, I assume those are the two biggest complaints most New Yorkers make?
Yeah, they are the two. And as far as complaints, noise is the biggest complaint. The city has a 311 line. Before that, they had other kind of phone lines, and more people called in with noise complaints than any kind of complaints, and construction led the list. But there was another there's a very interesting, perhaps quintessentially New York complaint that often gets recorded. I think the statistic is, I have it here somewhere, in 1 month, over 200 people called to complain about ice cream trucks, specifically Mr. Softy trucks, playing their specific theme song. And what these trucks do, they don't just roll through the neighborhood and play it once. They'll stand on one corner and play this song on a loop over and over again. So you know there's ice cream, but it also can drive you crazy.
Well, we'll have the vice president of Mr. Softy on later to defend his noisy confections. Another problem, as I understand it, is music.
Right. There are music from passing cars and also music from clubs. Now, clubs or bars know that you're not allowed to have noise above a certain levels, but there's another wrinkle, and that sometimes the bass gets cranked up so much that it causes vibration. So that the noise level don't... The old rule used to be you had to measure noise on a decibel meter before a citation could be given. Not every cop had one of these decibel meters, and the mayor also acknowledged that not everyone knew how to use a decibel meter. And sometimes the noise wouldn't be loud enough to register to warrant a ticket on the decibel meter, but the bass vibration would be so intense that the people upstairs or the people down the block could just feel it shaking.
Well, presumably we've gotten better at technology and devices to measure this sort of thing.
Well, what Mayor Bloomberg is trying to do now by his proposal is he wants to allow police and members of the Department of Environmental Protection to use what he calls a common sense approach, which means that if it sounds too loud to a cop 15 feet away, he doesn't need any bit of technology. He doesn't need to register this on a decibel meter. He could just say, that's just too loud, and issue a citation right there. And that would be the big change in policy. One of the biggest changes, the proposal would be one of the biggest changes in the past few decades.
But wouldn't that be necessarily subjective? I mean, one policeman might think that any level of country and Western music is too loud. To another policeman, it might be salsa. Who knows?
Yeah, I think that Patsy Cline is in the crosshairs of this one, as you suggest. But there's so much subjectivity that goes into policing. And what they are trying to do is they're trying to say that there is a baseline level of noise all the time. And they're just trying to evaluate noise that goes above the certain baseline. They actually have rules. They're proposing that if it's above 7 decibels above the surrounding area, then that would be grounds for a citation. But you don't need to have one of these decibel meters. It's all part and parcel of what was going on under the Giuliani administration, cracking down on these quality of life crimes. And now Mayor Bloomberg has picked up that ball. And it's kind of interesting. They're doing it for a couple of different reasons. Giuliani targeted these quality of life issues like squeegee men, very famously, the guys who would wash off your windshield with a dirty rag. And he thought about it in terms of crime prevention. There was that broken windows theory of law enforcement. And whenever he would arrest squeegee men, he would say, you know, he would cite statistics. 30-40% of these guys had arrest warrants out. Bloomberg thinks of it a little differently. Bloomberg thinks about it in terms of public health. I mean, it's just their orientation. Bloomberg has a school of public health named after him at Johns Hopkins University. And so the quality of life initiative that he's best known for is banning smoking in bars. And I think he looks at noise in the same context. It's a public health issue. It affects quality of life in that way. It might not affect crime. It just affects the livability of the city.
So how are New Yorkers responding to this idea?
Well, with all of these kind of issues, if you look at polling, the majority, and in this case, the phrase silent majority has never been so apt, they tend to support these sorts of issues. The majority did support the smoking ban. And when Bloomberg went against even jaywalking and the squeegee men, they supported that. But the issue is, well, when does it become tyranny of the majority? With this smoking ban, restaurant owners and bar owners were very much up in arms about it. Now, they didn't have the votes and they didn't have the political establishment behind them to do anything about it. I sense with this that, first of all, Mayor Bloomberg's got his ducks in a row, if you will. He had a broad coalition. And also, there's not the natural constituency of people to oppose this ban on excessive noise. So, for instance, I talked to the foreman, that jackhammer that we heard before, I talked to the foreman of that job, and he said, you know, a muffler, that would work, that would keep it quiet. And I said, well, why do you oppose that? And he said, well, we don't oppose it. It doesn't really cost that much, and it doesn't cut into the work. So there's not the natural constituency like there were.
Well, Mike has just left us from New York. I think we can tell that it's 15 minutes past the hour. So our line went down from New York. But that was Mike Pesca, who works for our sister program Day to Day. He joined us from our bureau in New York. And fortunately, we have somebody else to talk to right now. Councilman James Gennaro is with us. He's chairman of New York City's Council's Committee on Environmental Protection. He'll be reviewing Mayor Bloomberg's proposal to curb noise pollution. And good of you to be with us on Talk of the Nation, and a timely entrance, too.
Happy to be here, Neil.
This is the first serious overhaul of New York City's noise code in 30 years. Why now?
The council has taken a look at the noise code several times over the last 2 decades and made a couple of changes here and there. But I think we're doing it now for the same reason that the mayor is looking at it now, is that people are sick and tired of all the noise and want to know what we can do about it. And we as the council and as the administration are trying to do what we can by crafting proposals that will, you know, reduce noise to the extent that we can. I mean, we don't want to, we're never going to make New York City like the the prairie. It's just not going to happen. And New York is just a very noisy place. But to the extent that we can make the place a little more civil and put down guidelines that people think are fair, we think we're going to get a lot of cooperation. We think we're going to get a quieter city. So it's worth doing.
How does it address the problems? Does it say this level of noise, whatever level you happen to set, is too much? Or does it say this far from an apartment or this far from a school or from a construct? Does it address specific sources of noise?
It's actually, you know, all of those things. It's a very comprehensive approach that's been taken by the Bloomberg administration. And as the previous guest had indicated, there is the mayor has cultivated broad support among, like, the entertainment sector and the construction sector, you know, for these proposals, or at least, you know, got them to go along. We at the council have been doing similar things as well, and it was actually this body that came up with the idea for the plainly audible noise standard, which is woven throughout the Bloomberg proposal. So there is a lot of common thinking on both sides of City Hall on this, but there are, as you say, a combination of standards that are going to be applied that are going to be a little more common sense, a little more objective, and it will set out things like, you know, if you're standing so many feet from a, you know, certain type of, you know, noise source, if the officer can hear it plainly, then that person will be in violation. Where now it's a little more subjective. It depends upon the officer's definition of reasonable. It also gives more opportunity for people to use these kinds of standards without having to depend upon a noise meter.
Mm-hmm.
So someone doing the enforcement can merely rely on, you know, his or her own ears.
Common sense, in other words.
Common sense, but we have to get, you know, broad cooperation for this, and we're going to be doing a lot of public education. I think at the end of the day, the council along with the mayor are going to craft a much quieter city, and that would be a good legacy for all of us.
Let's get a caller on the line, and this is Ken, who's with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hello.
Ken, you're on the air.
Hey, excellent.
Good.
Great conversation. I live in Phoenix now, but I just moved out from a North Shore town on Long Island, where people would, if I had a barbecue, people would call up the police, and the police would show up if there were five or six people over at 10 o'clock at night on a Friday.
What town was this?
This is Oyster Bay.
Oh, Oyster Bay, sure. I know it.
It's,
go to Tabby's on Audrey Avenue.
Oh, best burgers.
Great place.
But a noisy place, Ken, is what you're saying.
No, it's a quiet little town, but people, I feel like a lot of times we give one person too much power in terms of their ability to complain.
Should we be more tolerant, Councilman Gennaro?
Well, I think that's the difference between, the Long Island standard and what we're going to try and do in New York City. I mean, we're kind of a party town, and we're going to, and people are going to be able to, have their fun, but have it within reason. I don't think you're going to find a situation where someone at, 9 or 10 o'clock at night with just a couple people in the backyard, tossing back a few beers are going to be hassled by the police.
Not too many people have backyards in New York City to begin with.
Got one.
Yeah.
Got one. Yeah,
okay.
Sure. A lot of New York City is quite suburban. 60 by 100 plots of property, so there's plenty of barbecues going on out here.
Okay.
And then with regards to New York City, a lot of times people will move into apartments above bars or restaurants and then all of a sudden complain that there's noise there.
Yes, but we're going to be doing what we can to try to, forge a standard which will be reasonable, which everyone can live with, and would also, speaking about bars, we'll also deal seriously the first time these heavy bass tones that come from discos that tend to, jar people's molars.
And we'll talk about that when we come back from a break. Ken, thanks very much for the call. If you'd like to join our conversation about noise, 800-989-8255 or email us totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan, back after the break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about noise and how it's affecting communities across the country. What's it like where you are? Tell us what your community is doing to mitigate noise and whether you think noise legislation is going too far. What interesting noises are part of your daily life? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, our email address, TOTN at NPR.org. We got this email from Diane Anderson in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. I hope I got that right. I have a simple solution for noise, earplugs. I put in earplugs when I sleep and when I read. You can purchase earplugs at your local grocery store. Of course, my husband and I have no kids. That helps, too. With us on the line from New York City is Councilman James Gennaro. He's a chairman of the New York City Council's Committee on Environmental Protection, which is reviewing a proposed piece of legislation to rewrite New York City's ordinances on noise abatement. And let's take another caller on the line. This is Elizabeth, who's with us from Columbia, South Carolina.
Hello.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth. I'm from New York City.
Aha, I'm sorry, I got that wrong.
That's okay. I'm calling from Columbia, California, and where it's very quiet where I'm visiting, but I was saying to the lady before, my block is the noisiest block in the world, and it just is making me crazy.
Which block is it?
I live on 3rd Street in Manhattan.
Okay.
So there's a motorcycle club there.
Yes.
And there is, but that doesn't even bother me. I'm used to that. I've been there 26 years. Mainly, it is the young people in the neighborhood, they think it's their private party. And all night long, they're laughing and yelling and screaming outside the bars, talking on their cell phones really loud until like 4 and 5 in the morning. And I'm a teacher. I have a really hard time sleeping. I've gone down in my pajamas and wish I had eggs to throw with them, but I didn't have any. And it's just making me crazy.
Well, this is part of why we're doing this sweeping noise proposal. There will be regulations put forward that will deal with the increased phenomenon of people standing outside bars, because of the smoking ban, of course, a lot of the people are coming outside, and the doors to these establishments are, swinging open, and there'll be prohibition against the noise actually spilling out onto the street, which is going to be, quite a problem for the nightlife industry. But they're so far giving support to the proposal. There'll also be things in there for personal communication devices and personal audio devices, things like radios, things like cell phones, when you can and can't use them. So there will be an opportunity for the police to come down and give violations. And if this is an area that has a persistent problem, be able to get someone there from the DEP, which is the local environmental agency, that can deploy people in problem sites to give violations.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we'll get you a good night's sleep, and you can get to stay in your apartment, in your pajamas, rather than having to venture out and deal with the miscreants on the street.
Good luck, Elizabeth.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye.
And Councilman, before we let you go, isn't a lot of this going to end up being either generational? You're going to get younger people who have an interest in making noise rather later than people like our last caller might be interested in.
Right.
Or different cultures. Again, if you give policemen the subjective ability to say, that's too loud, somebody's going to say, he didn't like my music, whatever that music was.
Right. Well, this is why we're bending over backwards to really create the most objective standards that we possibly can in order to insulate ourselves from these kinds of complaints and criticisms, which would be appropriate if we didn't take the steps that we're going to take to create a more reasonable standard that we can all live with. But and certainly you present the daunting challenge before us to craft something which is broad, which is sweeping, and this is something which we're not going to do a lot. I think we're going to do it once. We're going to do it in a comprehensive way, and we're going to do it right. And so it is going to be very tough to create the perfect law, but we're going to come as close as we possibly can. And, if we're easy, everybody would be doing it. So this is a very hard endeavor, but the one good thing is that, both the city council and the mayor are totally committed to launching this program. And so we're working hand in hand to make sure that we can give people the quietest city that we possibly can being that it's New York City.
Councilman Gennaro, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Neil.
James Gennaro chairs the New York City Council Committee on Environmental Protection. He also represents the 24th District in Queens and joined us from his office in New York. With us now is Eric Zwirling. He's director of the Noise Technical Assistance Center at Rutgers University and president of the Noise Consultancy, a company that helps municipalities to draft noise codes. And he's with us from the studios at Rutgers. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks, Neil. Pleasure to be with you.
New York is famously loud, but there are plenty of other places in the country that have noise as well. What other areas in the country is this becoming a big issue?
It all over the country, from border to border, coast to coast. I used to say in one of my lectures that it's not a Kansas wheat field out there. But in actuality, I got a call recently from somebody who is in a Kansas wheat field, and they've got stripper wells that are using unmuffled engines to pump out the last bit of oil. So it doesn't matter where you are. There's noise.
What do we know about noise and its effects on people?
Noise has a whole host of impacts, physiological, biochemical, and psychological impacts. They run the gamut from cardiovascular impacts, increased blood pressure, to sleep disturbance and the whole cascade of negative impacts that come from sleep disturbance. And in fact, noise-induced sleep loss is one of the critical components of community annoyance. Lack of sleep can result in exacerbating health conditions. And there are all sorts of neurological, behavioral changes that occur in people. And people get in the negative cycle where they are. I've seen people's lives in a negative spiral where their marriages are being torn asunder, houses are being sold at fire sale prices, they lose their jobs all because of the tension, the stress, the fatigue, the anxiety as a result of exposure to an unregulated noise source.
And other than the stress, you mentioned health issues. What are those?
Well, there are cardiovascular impacts resulting in increased blood pressure due to the vasoconstriction. There are some possible links to long-term hypertension. It's difficult to do a very, very good and controlled study because the population has to be very large. And some of the impacts are subtle. And so very large studies are necessary. And as a friend of mine, Dr. Arlene Bronzeff, would say, we are at about 1952 in our understanding of our impacts of smoking versus health. Noise is our understanding of precise impacts is not exactly where we'd like it to be.
Well, as if you consult with other municipalities, are there good guidelines for codes? Obviously, every city and town is different, that you might suggest to either Mayor Bloomberg or Councilman Gennaro?
Well, there are a number of different...
Hello. Well, we've just lost the line from Rutgers University as well. We're going to try to get that back and get an answer from Eric Zwirling. In the meantime, we'll take some of your calls about what situations like where you are. Steve joins us now from Kansas City.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call. This is a good program.
Thank you.
I can almost understand the noise in the city, but what I can't understand is driving 1,000 miles to a national park and the noise level in the national park.
And I know that snowmobiles were an issue in terms of their noise in Yellowstone.
Exactly. My biggest concern are the motorcycles that drive in huge packs now through the national parks. There's nothing louder. Not even the trucks that are in the national park are as loud as they are.
And obviously, it's the smaller two-cycle motorbikes. They may not be as loud as the four-cycle engines, but they're more annoying.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I just think there ought to be a quiet place where people can go, and national parks are the only thing I can think of.
Well, speaking on behalf of perhaps the people who like to go through on motorized devices, they need a place to go too.
That's true. I'm Friday, like I said, I'm going to be leaving on a 1,000-mile trip to a national park. I don't want to give up my vehicle, but for the quietness of the national park, I'd take a bus in there.
Okay. Which one are you going to, Steve?
We're going up through South Dakota into Wyoming.
Okay.
Leaving Friday.
Have a great trip.
Thank you, Neil.
And drive carefully.
All right. Bye.
Eric Zwirling is back with us. He's director of the Noise Technical Assistance Center at Rutgers University. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good. I can hear you breathing. That's always a good sign. I'm glad to have you back with us. Let's say goodbye to Steve. And what I wanted to ask you is if you had any advice for municipalities, just general advice on drawing up codes for the 21st century.
Well, first of all, they have to get all the agencies that are going to be involved in the enforcement together. You have to consult with the police from the very beginning. You can't just write a code and slap it in their hands and say, go fetch, mm-hmm. because they're professionals and they need to be consulted from the beginning. You need to make sure that any code enforcement agencies are involved. The judicial community is asked. You need to develop a constituency within the whole jurisdiction where people will feel like they are part of the program. Then you have to understand what are the talents and skills that they bring to the table. Is this going to be enforced strictly by police officers, or is this going to be enforced by environmental compliance officers? They've got different skill sets, and you have to make sure that you craft your code for the street. Who's going to be enforcing it? And write a code that understands that. I've seen codes written that are highly technical without any reality, without any realization that the officers at 3 o'clock in the morning are going to be between a call for a disturbance and a robbery, and they don't have the time to go and do elaborate measurements. So, in general,
is it better to have, you know, absolute standards? You need some sort of device, and it says this is 105 decibels, and that's too loud. Or is the subjective standard, like they were talking about in New York City, is that done too?
Well, first, let me say that in my position at Rutgers, I've probably trained about 4,000 officers over the last 14 years in taking sound level measurements. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to say that the standard that they're applying, the plainly audible standard, if properly applied, is not subjective. It is objective. It is that I can hear you at a certain distance, and in some cases for a certain duration. It's not a question of was it disturbing? Was it of music, the style that I don't care for? It has been upheld in court many times in a number of jurisdictions that a plainly audible standard is acceptably precise and it is objective if applied correctly.
Okay. Let's get another caller on the line. And this is Robert, who's with us from Millfield, Ohio.
Yes, thank you.
Sure, Robert, go ahead.
Quick question. I've worked on Wall Street, Madison Avenue, Shanghai, Hong Kong, all around the world because I worked for a multinational. There's always demolition and construction going on, and yes, it's very noisy, and I like to comment on earplugs because that's what I invested in so I could keep my sanity and on the way to meetings and such. However, I'm retired. I moved to the country. I'm in a township in Appalachia and southeast Ohio, and I got arrested on New Year's Eve because of loud music. And again, it was the sheriff's department's discretion about how loud it was, because somebody across the valley heard it. But the other comment is, that was New Year's Eve. That was 8 o'clock, and I didn't think that was, I mean, I wasn't going to have it on forever,
mm-hmm.
like a couple hours, and that's it. And yet I went to jail. But here, you know, there's coyotes, there's locusts, there's crickets, there's tree frogs, there's a lot of natural noise that there's no laws against, but yet if you get your windows open, you hear that. And again, sleeping, earplugs is my salvation. But I agree with what everything I've heard. These cities are reconstructing, doing demo and everything else, and they're very, very noisy, and I don't know what can be done about that. You know, how can you regulate progress? Because some of it is.
Are there technological answers to any of this, Eric Swirling?
Certainly. Well, first of all, one of the things we have to look for is for people to just basically be more respectful of each other, and that will go a long way to resolving the issue. There are a number of functions within a construction site, some of which are particularly and inherently noisy, some of which are quieter. If the people are put on notice that they have to try to quiet their operations, they will confine the noisiest stuff to the middle of the day and do the quieter interior stuff at night. But there are a number of modifications to the equipment. There are a number of modifications to the job site, the placement of equipment, the use of acoustical treatments at the job site. All these things can be done, but nobody, unfortunately, does it altruistically. You have to be brought to the table through regulation.
Robert, thanks for the call. And
well, I agree. And last comment on construction. When I worked in the Big Apple, I think then they couldn't start before 7 in the morning, and they had to quit by, I forget what, something early in the evening.
Yeah.
But still, that's early for some people.
Yep. Thanks very much, Robert.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email we got from Michelle in Sebastopol, California. I was in India, Ahmednagar, in the mid-1970s, staying in a small downtown inn. An Indian businessman was in the room next to mine. He got up early to get ready for work, and as soon as he was up, he'd put on Monster Mash by Bobby Boris Pickett, and at a fairly high volume. He would play it over and over and over until he left for work. When he got home in the evenings, he'd put it on again and often play it continuously until well past midnight. He was well within his rights to do so. There's no such thing as disturbing the peace in India. Americans are just a tad spoiled, don't you think? Do you think Americans are spoiled?
You're asking me for comment?
You're the one on the radio, yeah.
I'm sorry, I apologize. I think that people have to realize that there are... you have the right to the peaceable enjoyment of your property. That dates back to English common law. You have you've paid the taxes on your property, you mow the lawn, you do all the other maintenance of that house. You should be able to sit in your backyard and have a barbecue without somebody else's noise infringing on your enjoyment. You should also have the right to sleep in your house unimpeded. And what people don't realize is that noise, if it gets persistent enough, there are documented cases in this country and outside of this country of arson, assault, murder, and suicide as a result of exposure to an unregulated noise source. Now, I don't say that that happens regularly, but I would much prefer that enforcement has an opportunity to respond to a noise problem with a meter in their hand rather than having to wait after it's turned violent and then have the same officer have to respond with a weapon in his hand.
Eric Zwirling, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Eric Zwirling is a director of the Noise Technical Assistance Center at Rutgers University, the president of the Noise Consultancy, LLC. He was with us from a studio at Rutgers University in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Another email, from Angela in Corvallis. I went to college for a while in Providence, Rhode Island. A big reason I left was the constant harangue of those dang car alarms. The multifaceted horrors with all the bleeps, bloops, and whistles, one with the narrow streets easily setting them all off and the echo canyon-like housing, one could easily go quite mad. Now I'm rather deaf to racket, having two tots under the age of 3. Having kids is highly recommended for making one immune to almost any pandemonium. In fact, it's now those sudden moments of quiet that I dread. Keep smiling, Angela in Corvallis. Thanks very much for that. We'll have more on the noise issue coming after the break. Give us a call if you'd like to get in on it. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or send us an email, totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. To conclude our conversation about noise and noise abatement, joining us from his office in Runnymede, New Jersey, is Jim Conway, vice president of Mr. Softy, the largest franchiser of soft ice cream trucks in the United States. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks a lot for having me, Neil. Appreciate it.
Mayor Bloomberg's effort to curb noise in New York City targets the well-known Mr. Softy's jingle. What's your reaction?
Naturally, we're very concerned, but we also understand that in New York City that the noise issue has become a real quality of life issue. And we've been working in New York since 1957, and we consider ourselves to be good corporate neighbors, and we want to work with the city because we don't want to be perceived as being part of the problem.
As we heard earlier from Mike Pesca in New York, a lot of the problem, he says, according to the people he talks to, is that the Mr. Softy trucks come into the onto the street and then keep playing the jingle over and over again.
I would say that that's the biggest fault on the individual operator level. And the other problem that we have in New York, Neil, is that, you know, we have about 250 trucks operating in New York City area. There are at least as many independent ice cream trucks. Many of them are painted blue and white, and, you know, they all get thrown in the same barrel. And very often we get complaints about a truck, we'll get a license plate number, we do the research, and we find it's not ours. So that's part of the problem as well. But
now,
we understand that the guys that, you know, who are at fault, and it's a minority of people, play their music too long and they play their music too late, and we want to address that along with the city.
Okay. In all of those other cities around the country, has the Mr. Softy jingle come under fire before?
No, not really. There was one incident, I guess it was last year or so, but it was more on a one-on-one basis between one of the franchisees and someone up in Connecticut and Hartford. But generally speaking, you know, in Philadelphia and Chicago and a number of the other places that we operate, we really don't run into too many problems. But we also don't have the kind of density of population or the numbers of trucks.
Would it be fair to say that jingle, that's critical for your business, isn't it?
Yes, we absolutely believe, particularly in the neighborhoods, we need to be able to announce our presence to help let people know that we're there so that they'll come out of their house or come down from their apartments. And really the only rational way for us to do that is by playing the music.
We'll have to see how this works out once the piece of legislation actually emerges from the city council. Good luck.
Yes, thank you very much. We're hopeful we'll reach a compromise and it'll work out for everybody involved.
Jim Conway, vice president of Mr. Softy. His father and uncle founded the company in 1956, and he was with us from his office in Runnymede, New Jersey. One final call on this question. Bill is with us from Midland, Texas.
Hey, Neil, how you doing?
Very well, thanks.
I'm on the city council out here in Midland, and we passed an ordinance last year addressing noise and specifically booming vehicles driving down the street, and it passed the city council, but I voted against it because it really was an economic question. Instead of paying the money to have decibel meters in the hands of our police force, they wanted to make it subjective. And I equated this to saying, why don't we just have laws that say, you know, don't drive too fast, and then if somebody looks like they're driving too fast, we'll just arrest them.
Instead of a radar measurement, yeah.
Yeah, we put a lot of money in radar, and we put up signs, you can't drive this fast. But how do you put up a sign saying, here's what's too loud? So, you know, and this is a slippery slope, too. It's easier to address laws that are subjective, but I don't necessarily want to live in that society.
So that whole issue, if they'd been objective standards, if they've said if the boombox is playing or the music from the vehicle audible at 45 decibels or whatever it is, 15 feet away, that would have been okay?
That would have been fine with me, but the question became, gee, we just can't afford all those decibel meters.
Then maybe you're right. Maybe you can't afford the law either.
Maybe not.
How's it working out since it's been enacted?
Well, I don't think it's been enforced as much as people would like because of the question that it might be a little tricky in the courts. Our municipal judge has not seen many cases come through, so I don't know that it's had much effect. People may have turned their radios down out of worried about being, you know, captured, but I've heard complaints just as many today as before the law.
It's not the radio listeners. It's those people listening to those darn CDs. That's what it is.
Yes, and your point about the, you know, if Patsy Cline's singing real loud out of that car, maybe that doesn't bother somebody much as Snoop Doggy Dog.
Yeah, well, it depends on where you are, doesn't it?
It does.
Bill, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you, Neil. Have a great program.